All the equations which we need, all the fundamental equations from GR, and now we are going to start perturbing our FRW spacetime. So I want to spend some time on, so if you look at this stuff which we are going to do today, like the first 20 minutes of the lecture is available in all the books. So this is just like decomposition of the metric and the way different authors write their metric perturbations and so on. So I want to spend some time on the notation and giving you the dictionary, because then we'll follow Bardeen's notation. And only in the last week where we have to really compare with the physical predictions, because most of the authors and researchers have worked with conformal time, we'll go back to some other notation. But we'll first derive everything using Bardeen. So let us write down, so I gave you the metric yesterday in terms of the conformal time. So let us write down in that way and do the perturbation of this. I'll tell you what is the perturbation of this, because this is the most common thing which you will find in all the books. So we are working in conformal time, where this hij, I'll just explain what is this hij. This is different from what Bardeen calls his hij. I'll tell you what is Bardeen's notation also. So we have some conformal metrics. So just ignore A, B, Bi, and hij. Then this is a conformal metric which we wrote yesterday. If you put the so this is the perturbation in the lapse. Forget about it. So you have a minus D eta square. Forget about the perturbation in the shift. This was absent in our background. And forget about the perturbation on the spatial, in the spatial metric. So this is our, then the background metric. So this is the full space-time, perturbed space-time. We are doing linear perturbations. So this is the background space-time. And so let me write down the background metric. So background metric is A square eta minus D eta square plus gamma ij dxi dxj. So this is our background metric, FRW metric, and we are doing perturbation over this metric. So there is a perturbation in lapse, there is a shift vector which is zero in the background, so there is a, the shift vector gets, is of the order of the first order perturbation, and then the perturbation in the spatial metric. So now what we will perform, what is called the scalar vector tensor decomposition, or the SVT decomposition. And then we will restrict ourselves to scalar perturbations. So, but let me first tell you what, how we do that. So the idea is that any vector field, so if you are given any vector field, then you can decompose it as follows. That, so let us say we have a vector field Bi. Then it can be decomposed as a gradient of a scalar B plus a divergence-less vector, let us say B bar I, such that we have the divergence of BI, B bar I, 0. So this is well known from our mathematics class that we can write down a vector like this. And similarly, we can write down a rank 2 symmetric tensor in the same way. So what we are doing here is, this is the general, that this perturbation which we have done of the background is a general perturbation. Now we are going to extract the scalar, vector, and tensor elements from this perturbed space-time. And then we are only going to study scalar degrees of freedom in our course. But we can also do vector and tensor. If there was one more week, we could have done that. But we'll restrict ourselves to the scalar part. Okay. So for example, this is the scalar part now, the B. From the vector, we'll extract a scalar quantity like B here. Okay, so let us first do the hij part. So hij can be also written down as some, well, there is, okay, so this C is not the C which we were talking about in the class. This is some scalar C plus 2 dij, some E, all this C, A, B, C, D, E, etc. is very common in most of the books. So only that is why I'm showing you this, so that you can compare with other books, this part. Okay? And with the conditions that we can, the DI contracted with E bar IJ is 0, and E bar is traceless. So you can write down a symmetric tensor, two rank symmetric tensor HIJ, also in this particular form. And you can write down the vectors in that form. So there were 10 degrees of freedom in the metric. And there are 4 scalar degrees of freedom. And they are A, which is the perturbation in the lapse. Then there is a B, which comes from this decomposition of the vector BI. Then there is this C, which comes from decomposition of HIJ. And then there should be an E here. E here. Sorry. So there are 4 scalar degrees of freedom. Yeah. HIJ? Sorry, I cannot get you. Maybe there is a way. I'm not sure about it right now, but we are not interested in that right now. So this is a symmetric tensor, and we can decompose it in this way. Okay? That I know. Okay, so then we have 2 vector degrees of freedom, which are, so what are our 2 vectors? So we have B bar I as our vector, and then there is a vector E bar J or E bar I. Okay. So they have 3 components. So these are 4. They have 3 components each, right? But there are, so there are 3 components each. So the total components are 6. But then there are 2 constraints coming from here. So there is this one constraint and then the other constraint on EI. So they are again 4 degrees of freedom. 2 vector degrees of freedom, so these are total 4 here. Sorry. Yeah. So this is 4. This leads to 4. And then there is 1 tensor perturbation. I should not write degrees of freedom here. So 4 scalar perturbations. 2 vector perturbations and 1 tensor perturbation. And this is just E bar IJ, which has 6 independent components, but there are 4 constraints on it, which are these. 3 plus 1, 4. So they are again 2. So we have total of 10 again. Okay? So now we are going to be interested just in the scalar perturbations. We are not going to study the vector and the tensor perturbations. So if you just do the scalar perturbations of the metric. So if you just, if somebody says that all other components you can suppress, then the final answer which we get, if we just perturb the space-time and study the scalar perturbations, is this. So there will be 4 scalar perturbations which we will deal with, A, B, C, and E.
Why are there 4 degrees of freedom in the 2 vector perturbations?
because they have three independent components each, and there are two constraints on them because they are divergence-less. Yes, they are both. I haven't written down. Oh, this is on E bar I, but this is also divergence-less. So DI, E bar I is 0. Okay. Is the tensor ones, because there are three constraints, four constraints, one on this, and three from here, but they had six independent components. Yes. 6 minus 4 is 2. So this is, you will see in most of the books, this is the form. They may not have ABCE, they may have ABCD, they may have PQRS, whatever. So every author has his own nice way to write the things. But I'll give you now the dictionary so that we can compare with some of the standard books. And it turns out like most of the texts fall in two or three notations. They are just different. There is only a sign difference. So the way Mukhanov writes, if you look at the Mukhanov's book or his papers, he follows a plus minus minus notation, which we are not following, first of all, which also most books don't follow. But he writes ds square as a square 1 plus 2 phi d eta square plus 2 dib dxi d eta minus 1 minus 2 psi gamma ij minus 2i dj e and then dxi dx j. Then there is a book by Dodelson, which you must have followed in the previous course, probably. We have ds square. He doesn't take the conformal time the way Bardeen does. He also doesn't take conformal time. And then this is minus 2a square dib. Fortunately, everyone follows b as b or beta. So rest they keep changing. And then we have dxi dt plus a square. So here I want to mention that since in most of the books people follow conformal time, if you look at their final equations, there will be a factor of a square which will be different from what Bardeen has. Okay, and that factor of a square comes precisely when you switch from proper time to conformal time. Okay? But we'll see that in the end of the week. So don't get nervous if you see a factor of a square missing in Bardeen. Like, Bardeen's equations are completely correct. And by the way, like, I want to mention that the Bardeen's equation we were talking about yesterday is correct. So I'm very grateful to very good students pointing me where I missed the minus sign. It was in the very beginning lecture I put the minus sign at the wrong place in the one of the vectors. So minus 2i di dj e dxi dxj. Okay, so now let us come finally to most of the books will follow either this or this, something like this. But then Bardeen actually follows something which is very different in his 1988 paper. This is what we are going to follow. So he doesn't put lapse equal to 1 the way Dodelson has done. So that leads to various factors of n naught in the denominator of his equations. So if you want to compare with Dodelson, put n naught equal to 1. Okay. And then he calls A as alpha. And then he calls B as beta. And then, yeah, so this is the real difference here. So what most of the people call phi is the perturbation in the lapse, but this phi is perturbation in the gamma ij part. Okay, most gamma is generally used as the determinant of the spatial metric, and he uses gamma as the perturbation in the this antisymmetric part of the which will be associated with the di dj part coming from the spatial metric again. So his notation is slightly different, but eventually the main dictionary is that if you have Bardeen, if you have Mukhanov, and if you have Dodelson or similar, and most others fall either in the Mukhanov or Dodelson class, then if you have alpha, beta, phi, gamma, they go to phi b minus psi. This phi and this psi, they are all small phi and small size. I'll just introduce capital phi and capital psi. Okay, these are small, not capital. Minus e, then you have a b psi minus e. Okay. Now, we don't need this right away, but we will need it later on, and maybe Neil is going to cover this part, so it is important that I should tell you another dictionary. So at the moment, just take it that this is true. So there will be two Bardeen potentials, which people who have taken the previous cosmology course must have seen. And these are the ones which is, in using these are written most of the equations, final equations in most textbooks. Okay, so this is actually the more important dictionary. And these were introduced by Bardeen in 1980 as gauge invariant variables. We'll do this in very much detail in the course later on. But Bardeen calls them, so Bardeen defines them phi h. One of the potentials is phi h, which will be phi, this phi, his phi, minus h chi, where chi will be another variable. Let us not worry about it today, but just take it that it is there. And then the phi a, which will be alpha minus chi dot by n naught. He defines them like this. Everyone takes this, these as the definition, but the notation is different. So let us write that dictionary. So Bardeen what Bardeen calls as phi h, Mukhanov calls as minus capital psi. Okay, so this is his capital psi. That is our phi h. And Dodelson calls as minus capital phi. All these are capital. What Bardeen calls as phi a is what Mukhanov calls as phi. And Dodelson calls that capital psi. So if you compare two different texts, even forgetting about Bardeen, it can be confusing. So you have to be slightly careful. Just stick with one notation and get the final results, and then see like how they define the metric and how they are defining the Bardeen's potential. The final answer is same. It's just like different alphabets. Okay? So now we are going to follow Bardeen's notation. And in the end, like when we get the answers, we will switch to whichever notation you wish. Okay? Okay, so now I want to compute, first of all, so we learned about this intrinsic curvature on the hypersurface. Okay? Now I want to compute that suppose if you perturb the space-time, then what is the perturbation of this intrinsic curvature? And then we will compute what is the perturbation in the extrinsic curvature. Okay? These are two very important quantities. And actually the derivation of the perturbation of intrinsic curvature is not given in any book which I saw. So if you find any book, let me know that somebody has actually derived the final expression. And it can be tricky. But we will do this in the class. And this expression is needed everywhere. So whenever people talk about curvature perturbation, this is the quantity which we will be calculating today. They will be talking about the function of this. But most of the authors just quote the final expression. And they say like it can be done in a straightforward way, which we will see, that it is straightforward. Okay, so, but before we do that, I want to ask, like, in your GR course, do you guys derived an identity called Palatini identity? Okay, so that is the crucial piece. Using that, calculation becomes very straightforward. But let us first derive that, okay? But let me first explain you what we actually want to do. So we want to have, compute what is the perturbation delta Rij. Okay? Now to do that, so these are all spatial indices. And to do that, I want to write it as a, okay, so now this is, I should fix the notation. Okay, so we are going to follow exactly now what Bardeen's notation is. Okay, except his Fij will be our gamma ij. So we have, what we do is we have, we should compute this Hik Rkj. That is one way to do it. So this Hik is the whole spatial metric, the full spatial metric as given in equation 30 of Bardeen. So this is the full one. This is not the perturbation. Most of the authors write Hij is the perturbation of the spatial metric. So this Hij is the full metric, and this is actually, so Hij is A square gamma ij plus 2 phi gamma ij plus 2 bi dj gamma. So now we want to compute what all our calculations will be at the linear order. We are not going to do any nonlinear perturbations. So what we are going to do is we are going to write this, like this can be written as compute first delta Hik Rkj, and then compute the delta of Rkj. This is where we will use the Palatini identity. Okay, so now this is the general picture right now, but we are going to work only at the first order on the perturbations. So that means that if I consider the perturbation in the metric, I should be contracting with the background Rkj. There is no need for me to take the perturbation in Rkj. When I do the perturbation in Rkj, it is sufficient for me to stick to just the background Hik. Okay? So what I want to say is that if, so let us, for example, if we write Hij bar as the Hij background, then this is just A square gamma ij. So what basically I want to say is that compute the delta Hik and then Rkj bar, which you will compute in the homework. This is the homework which I gave yesterday. And then take Hik bar and compute delta Rkj. So this is our linear order in perturbations. Okay. So now this part is easy. This is super simple to calculate. This is the tricky part. So let us do that. So to do that, we are going to use a result which is called Palatini identity. It is available. So if you want to know more about this Palatini identity, there is a very good book by Strawman I don't know its title. He's a very good. He has described. He doesn't do the way I have done, but you can read more about it in this book. Like, he has read various useful identities in GR, which is not available in many books. Okay. So. Okay. So, what we want to prove? So we want to prove. We want to use the Palatini identity to find this delta RKJ. We'll get a final expression. You can do it brute force method. Take full Riemann curvature and write it down in terms of the metric. Perturb the metric, find the perturbation of the Riemann curvature, and do appropriately the contraction of this full perturbed Riemann curvature, and you should get delta Rij. Right? Like, this is the way. What we are going to use the Palatini identity is to simplify, to get to some step where we can immediately start putting the things. We don't have to go through this messy step. Okay, so the claim is, the result is that delta R mu nu is delta gamma alpha mu nu alpha minus delta gamma alpha mu alpha nu. Okay, so to prove this, we can, what we have to do is we have to start with the definition of R mu nu, and we have to write R mu nu in terms of the Christoffel symbols. So I'll assume that you know that how Riemann curvature is to be written in terms of Christoffel symbols, and I have contracted two indices. Okay, I'll give you the final expression here. So if you do that, so the Ricci tensor can be written in this way, where essentially what we have done is we have taken the full Riemann in terms of Christoffel symbols, contracted two indices, and we'll get this answer. Okay, it is very simple. And then we just perturb delta R mu nu, and then we will get terms like delta alpha. So we are going to perturb. So when I perturb, the delta acts on this, but delta goes through this delta alpha. Okay, and then we will have similarly delta nu delta, and then we will have four more terms, each coming from this. Delta first acts on this, so you'll get a gamma alpha alpha lambda, gamma lambda nu mu, then delta acts on this. Okay, shall I write it down, or this is obvious? So then delta acts on this. Okay, and then delta acts on this, and then delta acts on this. So there are six terms. Okay, and now once we get this expression, we have to use another expression, which is also very simple to show, just using the definition of the covariant derivative. That a covariant derivative acting on this delta is delta alpha delta gamma alpha nu mu minus delta of gamma alpha lambda mu nu gamma lambda nu alpha plus gamma alpha nu lambda delta gamma lambda alpha mu minus delta gamma alpha alpha lambda gamma lambda nu mu. So this is just the covariant derivative acting on this entity here. You get this? Now identify the terms from here. You'll have to add and you'll have six terms. These are four terms each. You'll have to add and subtract a term. And then what you will get is then you will get that.
You will get the answer. The delta r mu nu is covariant derivative alpha delta gamma delta alpha nu mu minus covariant derivative nu delta gamma alpha alpha mu.
It is very simple, okay, this identity, which is the same as this equation. So now we are going to use in this equation the Christoffel symbol, the variation of the Christoffel symbol. This is what we want to know, and this is very straightforward to compute again from the definition of the Christoffel. And this is, so I'll give you just the answer of what is this. And so, okay, so this calculation is independent of this Bardeen's notation right now. So there is some metric G mu nu, and then you have a perturbation of the metric, which we will eventually compute. G nu alpha beta plus so if you write down the Christoffel symbol in terms of the metric, and if you do the variation of the Christoffel symbol, this is the final answer which you will get. And now we just have to use this inside this. We'll get a delta mu, delta of r mu nu, and we will compute that delta of r mu nu. Okay, so what is the answer? So, So in terms of Bardeen's notation, if I want to compute delta Rij, and I use all this result which I have shown you, then one just has. So this is the spatial metric now. Like, I'm very sorry. Like, we'll have to get accustomed to the notation. This is. And in our mind, this is always a fluctuation, but this is a full metric. Okay, this is like this G mu nu here, essentially. We are computing now this on the hypersurface. And then there is a fluctuation of delta H, which we erased, which is, what was it? So yeah, so delta H ij for us is just 2 phi a square gamma ij plus 2a square di dj gamma. So this is just the perturbation in the spatial part. This perturbation of the scalar perturbation in the spatial part of the metric which we have. So we have delta h bi. Okay, so let us call, we use this symbol, right, j, this bar. The bar means covariant derivative on the hypersurface, okay, instead of the semicolon, minus of delta h a b bar ij plus delta h bj bar ia minus delta H ij bar AB. So what we have done is we want to compute this quantity. For that we use the result called Pelletier identity. And in the Pelletier identity we just substitute this thing inside here. And this is in the version which we need, that result. Okay? It's very simple what we are doing. Pelletier identity is actually very simple to prove, as you have seen. But it's not given in many books. Okay, so now we are going to compute this. That is the only game which we want. So let us do it term by term. So this is where we have to be careful. Okay. So let us recall. So we'll compute first. So as I said,
this is delta of hik rkj, where this rkj is just the background, which is very simple. And then hik of the background and delta of rkj. So we are computing this term first, because this is the hardest term to compute. So delta of hij is 2 phi a square gamma ij plus 2 a square di dj gamma.
So now let us do term by term. Let us take the first term.
So I'll call them different terms. Number 1, number 2, number 3, and number 4. And then we'll add them.
So let us look at term number 1. So the term number 1 is half of HAB delta of HBI
covariant derivative JA.
So now let us, so you can easily compute the, so there is this H delta HIJ, right? So you can easily compute the inverse perturbed metric, okay? So the inverse perturbed metric is, if you want to compute delta of G mu nu, so this is some G mu nu full minus G mu nu background. So you know G mu nu, you know G bar mu nu, right? And you also know what is the full G mu nu in Bardeen's notation, and you also know what is delta of G mu nu. From here, using the left-hand shift and raising and lowering of indices, you can get delta of G mu nu also. Okay, so the only change will be that some of the signs of the perturbations will be negative. Okay, that is the only thing. This is easy. So, so this term half of HAB, since okay, so again let us look at this term, right? So we have this times this. So this is already a first order perturbation. So this is sufficient to be taken as the background. Okay, we don't take perturbation in this part. We take perturbation in this part. So if you just take that, then this is half, and this will be, HAB will be, let us write this as HIJ. HIJ will be, HIJ is what? Gamma IJ, A square gamma IJ, plus this. Okay? So now I want to take HIJ with upper indices in the background. So that will be 1 over A square, gamma IJ with upper indices. So I will get 1, I'll get a half. And then from HAB, I will get gamma AB and an A square in the denominator, because there is an A square in the numerator here. And then I have to take the delta. So there is a 2 in both terms, so I take out a 2, put it outside. This will go away. And then if I do that, I will just have A square phi gamma bi plus a square db di gamma ja. Okay? So this is our first term which we want to compute. And this is very easy to show, that this is gamma ab, gamma bi. And now instead of this bar, I will use capital D, which is our notation. This is dA dj phi plus gamma AB. And we have to remember the fact that the dj annihilates, the covariant derivative is compatible with the spatial metric on the hypersurface. It annihilates that. So we'll get dA dj dB dI gamma. This is our, we can write this as I think this is sufficient right now. Okay, so now Similarly, we can compute the second term, and I will just give you the answer. You have to do in the same way, exactly this calculation. These are just like two-line calculations. This term will be minus 3. Just a second. So okay, so you will get a 3 because you will have a gamma AB and a gamma AB coming from here. So you'll have a trace of the delta, essentially. And this capital delta is defined as DIDI. This is the Laplacian on the hypersurface. So similarly, you can compute the third term. And the third term will be half HAB and delta of HBJ IA, and this will be again gamma AB, gamma BJ, DA, DI phi plus DA, DI, DA, DJ gamma. And then there will be a fourth term, which is minus half GAB delta of GIJ AB will be minus A square grad phi gamma IJ minus delta DIDJ gamma. So just note these equations. So you can check them. And we will add them. But before we do that, so this is our answer which we wanted for delta RKJ. We have computed it. We'll just add these terms, essentially. But we have to be careful in some terms. We have to use some facts. Now very carefully. We have to use the fact that if a covariant derivative acts on a scalar, it's just a partial derivative, okay, to go to the next result. Similarly, we'll have to show that dA dI phi is symmetric because you can compute it. The dA acting on a vector like dI phi, it will give something plus a Christoffel, and using the symmetries of the Christoffel, the lower indices of the Christoffel, etc., etc. So what will happen is that this term will cancel two of these terms, so you'll get a minus di dj phi, kind of. Okay, so let us go ahead. But these are the four terms. So to finish the calculation, now let us compute the other terms. So let us now go to the first term, which is this. So if you use the first term and if you compute the delta of HIK, then as I told you to compute the inverse metric, then the perturbation part is just minus 2 phi by A square. Minus 2 phi by a square gamma ij minus 2 by a square di dj gamma. So the only change is the minus. Like instead of plus, you will get a minus sign in the inverse, but perturbation in the inverse metric. So now let us take delta of hik and contract it with rkj. So this is going to give us the first term now fully. We have almost done the second term, but I'm just going to the first term to see what is going to come out so that I know how I should arrange the terms here. Okay. So this will be just minus 2 phi by a square gamma ik minus 2 by a square di dk gamma. And then rkj, which is the rkj background, because we are working at the linear order, is, as I gave you in the homework yesterday, is just 2c by a square hkj. Here hkj is the hkj in the background. So this is just a square gamma kj. Okay? This is straightforward. So we have taken, we have seen the perturbation in the inverse metric, which is this. And we contract with the background Ricci tensor, which is this. Where C is the spatial curvature. C equal to 0 is flat, and C greater than 0 is closed, and so on. Okay, so this gives us two terms, which are minus 4C by A square phi delta ij, because gamma ik, so A square cancels, A square in the, hkj is A square gamma kj, which is the background hkj. A square cancels with one of the A squares in the denominator. And gamma kj, gamma ik is Kronecker delta. So you get delta ij, and the next term which you get is minus 4c by a square di dj gamma. Okay. So this is one answer which we required. This is the simplest to compute. So most of our calculations will involve a lot of terms, but each term is simple to compute. Okay? Like, and they will just become simpler and simpler, because we, once you have computed the background RKJ, you can just straight away use it. Once you have computed the, once you have computed this quantity, you can again straight away use it. So we'll be always using the previous equation which you have derived, so things only become simpler. They just become lengthy because there are many terms and you have to carefully track each term now. Okay? That is the point. So if you compute all this, these four equations, then one of the intermediate steps is that delta of Rij is minus di dj phi. And this you get because of these three terms here. Then you get a minus of a square, this term, grad phi gamma ij, oh sorry, not grad phi, the Laplacian acting on phi, plus you get four terms. And this is where you have to use the, so you get first term as this. Then you get minus. So I'm just rewriting those four terms. 1, 2, 3, and 4. And you have to play with them. And you get a plus. So an alternate way to do this calculation is brute force. Wherever you see a covariant derivative, just take it as a partial plus the Christoffel. Don't, so in this calculation I have hanged around with dA almost till the end. People can do it in many different ways. They can just compute this explicitly, term by term, and then do the get the final answer. They'll get the same final answer. I think it is just lengthy that way. So that is why I have stuck with this. So then you get dI dj gamma. So now here, to go to the next step of this, you have to use this identity of the dA dB sum vector is the Riemann curvature times that vector, which I showed you in the first lecture. Okay, and then you have to take the contraction and so on. Because what is going to happen is like this. So you have, so let us look at two of the terms. So let us look at the, So let us look at, for example, these two terms here. Okay? So I can identify dj gamma as some
vector, let us say chi j. I can just say this is some vector field, chi j. And then I can write this delta as dA, dA, because this is just the Laplacian. Right? So now I can rewrite these two terms as dA, dI, dA, minus dA, dI, chi j. Right? And now I can use the identity over this part. Okay, I'll have to do a contraction. I'll get a Ricci, and then I will, from the Ricci, I will again use that it is 2c by a square hkj. So this is going to give you two such terms. You'll have to use it twice, once here, once here. So you'll get a 4. So my claim is that from these four terms, which are here, you will get... Okay, so let me write down the final answer once you have done all that. A trick. So minus di, you will get a minus di dj phi minus a square grad phi, or sorry, Laplacian of phi, gamma ij, plus 4c by a square di dj gamma. This is the final answer you will get. Okay? Now another way to look to do this derivation is to just assume that you are at the in the spatially flat metric. That C is 0, capital C is 0, and then just compute the Christoffels and so on, starting from here itself. Okay? So, now we are almost there. You can do this calculation in many ways. Like, I'm just presenting one way. Okay, so we have computed that. So, now we are ready with delta Rij. We have computed everything we needed for this. So delta Rij is Hik in the background, delta Rkj plus delta of Hik, and then Rkj in the background. And now we can write down delta of Hik. Oh no, sorry. We can write down Hi. We know what is delta of Rk j. Just one second. So this is this. Yeah. So now we can just write, we can just act Hik off the background on this term. So we will get minus di dj phi minus grad phi, oh sorry, Laplacian of phi, delta ij, plus 4c by a square di dj gamma. So this di's, this is very important to note, that we need the full metric, including a square, to raise the index of d. This is the way Bardeen uses. And so if you just use with gamma, then you will miss out a factor of a square in some of the expressions. So if you do it carefully, then there is no missing out a factor of a square. So if you compare these equations with some of the intermediate equations in which are given in some very few books, you will find that Bardeen has an extra factor of a square in some denominators, and that essentially occurs because of this fact. Okay? So... Okay, these are the three terms which come from the first term. And then we have the other terms coming from this term, which is minus 4c by a square phi delta ij, and then minus 4c by a square di dj gamma. So now this cancels with this. So gamma goes away fully. And what we are left with is the delta of Rij is minus di dj phi minus 4c by a square phi delta ij minus grad phi of delta ij.
This is the result
which we wanted.
Okay, so this is our
So this is the delta rij. So what Bardeen has written is the full rij, which is equation 31. So in his equation 31, he writes full rij, which is of the full inhomogeneous background. So that will be the background rij plus this delta rij, right? So this is just r bar ij plus delta of rij. And this is equal to 2c by a square h ij, or 2c by a square delta ij. Yes. 2c by a square delta ij plus all this. So we have minus di dj phi minus 4c by a square phi delta ij and minus grad phi of delta ij.
That's our equation number 31. So this is the full intrinsic curvature or full Ricci tensor on the inhomogeneous background for the scalar perturbations. And as you can see, like, it only depends on one perturbation, and which is the perturbation phi. It doesn't depend on gamma. And that will play a very important role later, that why this curvature perturbation has such nice properties. That it is essentially because there is no gamma dependence. Like we saw, like gamma cancels away. And if you're given just the perturbation in phi, so if you look at his equation number 30, suppose you don't know the next perturbation, di, dj gamma at all, you can be sure that the intrinsic curvature perturbation doesn't depend on it. Okay? Okay, so I think we should stop here. I wanted to do the extrinsic curvature also, but yeah.
Is there a physical reason why the intrinsic curvature doesn't
I think that's something I'll have to think about. Why do you expect? Why you don't expect? Because it is a priori, it's not obvious, right? Like hij. I have to think about it, but why? What is the physical reason for that? So, because you know that hij full is a square gamma ij plus a square plus 2a square phi gamma ij plus this term plus 2a square di dj gamma. So this is the hij spatial. So it is really a priori not obvious to me that if you perturb this metric and the intrinsic curvature coming from this part will be independent of gamma.
Yeah.
It's not obvious, like, but it turns out to be true. So because the terms cancel.
So,
yeah, probably. It is only true at first order. But this is going to be a very important. So all these things like this, there, you must have been told in the previous course, there is this zeta which is preserved and at the large scales, and the curvature perturbation plays such an important role. And the fact is that this, just because of this, this fact, you can identify this phi with the Bardeen potential and so on, and that will play. One of the Bardeen potentials will be a direct measure of this curvature perturbations in one of the gauges. So this is a very nice property. This is a very relieving thing. But it takes some time to see this. So you'll have to do some work here. But it is straightforward. We can do. And you have to use the fact that how di acts on a scalar, how di will act on a vector, and how, if you have four terms, how do you act on them. Okay? Okay, good. So I wanted to do equation 32 also, so I'll do it on Monday. And then I think we should do the gauge transformations.